to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a...
No mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika. Kia rana, Inika.
Kia rana, Alison.
Well, look, we've just celebrated Cook Islands Language Week. E Pe Toma o Te Reo Māori Kuki Airani 2021 with the Auckland Libraries. We've been trying to channel a bit of that beautiful Aitutaki sunshine into the grey Auckland skies, as those southerlies have been hitting us hard this week, haven't they?
It's been very chilly, very chilly. Now, the theme of this year's celebration was, now I'm going to give my best crack at this pronunciation, is Ātuitua ia o ki te ono, one one o tōku ue tupuna, which means connect me to the soil of my ancestors. Now, this is a call to bring young people of the Cook Islands back to the language and culture of their own whānau and their heritage. Now, Auckland Libraries Collections can definitely help you with that. You can browse the catalogue for items for your tamariki in Cook Islands Māori and, of course, in many other Pacific languages. So you'll find those in some libraries for browsing and on the catalogue for requesting to any library.
Sounds good. And you can always ask the staff at your local branch
Absolutely.
For help.
They'll help get you there.
Now, on today's show, we're going to be talking about what we've been reading and also what's on our massive to-be-read list. And we've also got an explanation as to why our TBRs have blown up exponentially over the past week.
The past week or two, absolutely. Well, my first book to feature today is Remote Sympathy by Catherine Chidgey. This was published last year, and you may remember Catherine Chidgey from her Ockham-winning The Wish Child from probably about 4 years ago now. Now, this Remote Sympathy is set in Nazi Germany again. This time it's set in and around Buchenwald, which was a forced labour camp in Germany during World War II, of course. And it's also set in the neighbouring town of Weimar. Now, this is a really compelling cautionary tale about the perils of willful obliviousness. And it's told by those who were there. So from the German perspective, but from few different German voices. So in this book, you've got four main narrative voices, and they tell their stories in chronological order. They're telling them through letters, diary entries, and there's also an interview transcript from it's from basically post-Nuremberg trials. Now, each one sort of keeps a little bit of distance from the horrific events. So this is not a... it's not a particularly graphic book if you're thinking about concentration camp as a subject, but there's an element of distance, which I think comes in with that remote sympathy side of it, whether it's for sheer survival or self-preservation or even self-service in some cases. So our main characters, we have political prisoner who's Dr. Leonard Weber. Now, he's been separated from his Jewish wife and daughter, and he's the inventor of a machine that is intended to cure cancer by using electrical impulses. Then you have our senior camp administrator, Dietrich Hahn. Now, he manages supplies and logistics for the rapidly growing population at Buchenwald. Especially, this is the last half of the war, so it's really ramping up, as you may know from previous reading and study. Dietrich's wife is also a character here. So Greta Hahn and her son, they live near the camp, and they live this sort of cushioned, blinkered life of privilege right next to the camp, kind of ignoring what's going on right under their very eyes. Now, you've also got... you've got this fourth voice that comes in too, and that's the thoughts of the 1,000 Weimar citizens who live in the town right near the village. Now, they're sort of a Greek chorus. They're passing judgment and spreading rumours about what's going on at the camp, why prisoners are in there and why they perhaps deserve to be in there. So, yeah, it's that's a bit of a wake-up call, and it's based really on some first-hand accounts of American soldiers walking Weimar citizens through the camps in the days post-liberation. And this is well-documented with many many people in the town still not really believing what was going on, even though they are right there and seeing it.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it's a very, very well-written story. You've got these sort of first-hand descriptions of all the logistics of camp life and the finances that needed, you know, to keep the Nazi war machine rolling, you know, with this thinly veiled, situation going on behind the scenes, really. And, of course, we know that that's happening across Europe at this time. Now, when Greta Hahn becomes ill with a suspected tumour, Dietrich arranges to have Dr. Weber come and visit the family home under subterfuge, and he is going to treat her with his sympathetic vitaliser machine. So that's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
Now, Weber's really desperate for news of his family because he's separated from them, and he's trying to get a bit more control. So he actually keeps the treatments going, even though he's got this... You know, he's pretty much 99% sure that his machine actually doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But for his own self-preservation and to try and help the situation with his own family, he kind of lets this story play out that Greta is getting better for everybody.
Mm.
Very interesting. So they're in this really interesting compromised sort of a situation there.
Now, and you can understand, I was just going to butt in there, you can understand why he would do that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Even though it's unethical, but I mean, it was a hugely ethically questionable time.
Completely. Yeah. And really, this is his only chance at any kind of measure of control over his own destiny and that of his family. So he's really trying his best. And as part of his work, he also sometimes gets extra food. And so there's this really interesting kind of tension behind the fact that he's being given better clothing to be able to come into the house. He's being given food. And, of course, he's then going back into the camp with his fellow prisoners.
Mm.
Really, really fascinating. Her writing is so beautiful. It's very sensory and evocative. She's done a great job of building tension. I mean, obviously, we kind of know how this story ends in some ways, but she kind of slowly pulls back the veil on what's actually going on at the camp as you go along. And she's an incredible scholar, so she does extensive research on the ground and back here in New Zealand. And she's kind of blended fact and fiction in a really detailed and fresh way of looking at World War II, really. I mean, this story is broadly familiar, but the way she treats the subjects is just so fresh, you know, and so, so valuable.
Yeah. Oh, it's fabulous.
It's a really huge book. It's 500-plus pages, but the amazing thing is it reads as a very fast book, or it did for me anyway, because it was so absorbing. There's a really beautifully nuanced respect for her subject, and I think, you know, everyone should read this book.
So it does come highly recommended, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, look, similar but different, of course. I've been reading a book this week that's also based in conflict, in big conflicts, but in the later part of the 20th century. And this is the one that I alluded to last week, and it's called The Last Great Road Bum by Hector Topar, and it was published in 2020. Now, I loved this book. So the author, Hector Topar, he was born in Los Angeles in the 1960s, and he's the son of Guatemalan immigrants. He's had a long career in journalism and creative writing, and in fact he's a Pulitzer Prize winner for journalism. So this novel, it's one of those hybrid fiction/non-fiction ones that you and I both really like, and they do seem to be a bit of a thing these days.
Mm.
So it tells us the story of a real-life American adventurer and road bum whose name was Joe Sanderson. He was an idealistic and restless young guy from the Midwest of America, and he hitchhiked around the world for about 20 years from the early 60s, and he died in Central America fighting with a Salvadorian rebel army.
Wow.
So there's no real spoiler alert by giving you that information.
Mm.
So now, Jo Sanderson was trying very unsuccessfully to write the great American novel. He really did rate himself as a writer, and he thought of himself as another Hemingway.
That's a common issue with young men, I think.
Yeah, I think it might be, actually. Yeah, and so Hector de Hoba sort of makes it pretty very clear that he was in no way... was he a Hemingway or a Kerouac or any of those sort of guys? But he did have this remarkable 20 years on the road, and he happened to be there to witness nearly every major war and revolution around the world. So he was there for quite well-known battles in Vietnam, Korea, Nigeria, the Congo, the Middle East and Central America and more. He just happened to be everywhere.
Wow.
And also he was witnessing the growing civil rights movement in his own country, the USA.
Mm.
Now, I'm going to use the word literally like a millennial here. I was going to say he literally travelled the world on the smell of an oily rag, but it almost literally. He managed to talk his way onto buses, trains, cargo ships and often really dangerously overloaded aircraft. Because he had virtually no money,
right.
You know. But he did acknowledge that his all-American good looks, you know, the all-American boy, the blonde hair, blue eyes, these looks got him a long way in a very dangerous world. But he also knew that one day his luck was going to run out.
Mm.
So the book's based largely on letters that he sent home to his mother in Illinois. He was a meticulous correspondent, but his letters, they really did downplay the danger that he was in. Did I say I loved this book?
I think I did. It's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's you know, mostly quite an upbeat read. I've always loved a road trip story, but I found I learnt so much by reading this. The narrative is written in such a way it really helped me put so many historical events into context and into a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And things that many of us will have heard of, you know, different battles and various hotspots around the world. You could sort of put them into some sort of context. And also you get to see America's hand in many of these hotspots too. You know, look, there's heartbreaking scenes such as the deaths of children. But the writing of these parts, it's really exquisite. And I sort of felt that as a reader, you got the feeling of bearing witness to human tragedy. And that also, at the end of the day, sometimes it's better to read and write about these sort of things than just ignore them,
sure.
Or whitewash them from our collective memory. It's a beautifully presented book. The front and end papers, if you put them together, they form a map of the world with a hand-drawn representation of Sanderson's journeys.
Wow.
And there's a few photos scattered through the book too, and these would be ones that he posted home to his mother.
Mm.
And the other thing I loved about it, it's got quite a few really cheeky footnotes scattered throughout, and they're written by Joe from beyond the grave.
Oh, in his voice.
Yes, in his voice, and he criticises the author's version of events.
Wow.
It's a good one. It's great.
He's almost like an ambulance chaser, isn't he? That the Hemingway part, really, that he was following and wanting to document
Spanish
Civil War for Hemingway?
Yeah, I think it was that. And he was almost there in places just before something big happened.
Wow.
It was remarkable.
Gosh.
Yeah, highly recommended too.
Sounds so good. Well, I've got another one I can, highly recommend as well. For one of my book clubs that I go to, I recently read Reservoir 13. I've got Reservoir 11 written here. Thank goodness I caught that. By John McGregor. This is a 2017 book. I don't know why this one, I took so long to get round to this one. It was a really big book in that year. But it could be because I got the impression it was a crime novel.
Oh.
And it's actually one of those ones we were discussing last week, like Before You Knew My Name, where it revolves around a crime, and that's sort of the kicking off point, but it's not actually a crime novel. So this novel opens on New Year's Eve. We're in an unnamed village in the north of England. A 13-year-old girl who's been visiting and holidaying in the area with her parents has gone missing on this night. Now, her parents and the police and all the villagers are all searching for her that night, and they continue searching for her as the days, weeks and months pass, but it's actually in vain. You know, there's really no hide nor hair of her. The case remains open, but as the trail grows cold and there's no real clear explanation as to what's happened, the daily life in the village eventually returns more or less to normal. Her parents do stay on the scene for quite a while, obviously trying to make sure that the case remains top of mind for local police. Now, each chapter from the first onwards covers a year in the life of the village and the villagers in the aftermath of her disappearance. So there's 13 chapters, one for each year of her life. You get introduced to the wide cast of villagers who live there. You learn about their relationships with each other and with their land and their place. And as you go, you're jumping from one household, one event, one scenario to the next and the next, on and on across the years. And you're sort of watching the flow of just ordinary lives and their changing of those lives following the incident. The beautiful thing is that you get also the signs of the changing seasons of, you know, the built landscape and the natural landscape. You get all those important moments of the year which come back around again because you're following 13 years worth. Christmas carol services, babies get born, you know, marriages happen, divorces happen, fundraisers, the jumping of the trout, the fox cubs are born, and all of those pleasure and pain points of those village life as well. Things like church committees and allotment management and the local pub and the school teachers coming in and out. Across the years, you still get the presence of the girl and her disappearance rising up in the book at different times. So, you know, they're sort of triggered by sounds of a helicopter going over, or you get a report of somebody who's dressed in similar clothing in a different part of the town and different things like this. There's all these points of intrigue that keep coming up as well. So you've got the reservoirs and the hills surrounding the town. You've got these gated caves through the hills. You've got a particular villager who gets imprisoned by having sort of special interest pornography. You've got a secret relationship between the missing girl and a local teenager. There's all these little intriguing parts, but actually it's really hard to pin down who and what and where and whether they're really coming into play or not. It was such a good book. It's a little bit hard to describe, but it was quite hypnotic because of that repeating structure of a year per chapter. And it has this beautiful, simple writing, but in a very clear-eyed noticing of all the little details that make up the whole picture. It sort of reads a bit like narration by a neutral observer, but a kind of benevolent observer, I guess. It's sort of like an eye that sees all and focuses in and then pulls out to a wide view. There's no judgment from the narrator. It just kind of accepts life as it is. Yeah. Beautiful writing. He's actually a professor of creative writing, John McGregor, and his books have made it to the Book Along list 3 times so far. So this is a great endorsement for his writing and his books. So I'd really encourage you to try this one and try others by him.
Wow, that sounds amazing, actually. Well, now, it's interesting that you talk about the Book Along list because now we come to our to-be-read list because it's Booker time again.
It is.
And the long list was just announced last week, and we're calling it a Booker's Dozen, so that means it's 13 titles. So, gee, I don't know about you, but when the long list came out, it made me realise I've got a huge amount of reading ahead of me.
Yes, that's right. I mean, 13 titles from over 150 significant titles nominated. So there's always a few well-established authors on the list. You know, this time around, people like Kazuo Ishiguro would be a good one to start with. But there's always so many that come out of left field and catch on the hop too.
Yeah, but I love that about it.
It is. It's always a lovely surprise.
Yeah. So, and some of the titles, they're not quite on our library shelves yet, but you should be able to get your name in the queue for all of them.
That's
we
right.
We do believe. Yeah. So that's what we're kind of advising people to do.
That's right. Yeah, you can already get in the queue. There are a few books that are, you know, some of these books actually are not even being published yet. So Bewilderment by Richard Powers, who wrote The Overstory, is a good example of this. It's actually not published till September.
Oh, heavens.
But the catchment for the Booker Prizes goes up to the end of September for 2021 in terms of publication dates. So, yeah, I mean, we can't beat ourselves up too much for not having read every single book on that list.
Yeah, especially those ones.
Well, you can't even get your hand on them yet.
Yeah. Now, look, you can find the long list at thebookerprizes.com, but we'll be publicising them on our blogs and our book lists as well. But, they all look to be of exceptional quality, and they're going to be massively popular with the punters.
Yeah, everyone likes to have a bit of an explore and make their decisions, their own decisions. Yeah.
And then, of course, the shortlist of six books is going to be announced on the 14th of September, and then the winner is on the 3rd of November.
That's right.
So we've got exciting times ahead. But what we've done, we've actually got some reader-like suggestions for books that you might want to tackle while you're waiting to get hold of the long list titles. And today, I think we'll have time to talk about two of the Booker's Dozen, and we'll give you some reader-likes as well. So, look, I'll start with, one that's made the long list. It's called Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. I'm really excited about this one. It's a book about the intertwined journeys of two fictional women, an aviator, Marion Graves, who disappeared with her plane in 1950 while she was trying to circumnavigate the globe, and her journey intertwines with a Hollywood actor, Hadley Baxter, who plays Marion Graves in a biopic. So I'm wondering if Maggie Shipstead's taken inspiration from the real-life Amelia Earhart story. She was a glamorous aviatrix,
yes.
who disappeared in a small aircraft over the Pacific in 1937. Lot of intrigue around that and conspiracy theories.
True.
But in the meantime, we're sort of thinking about some books that you could read while you wait for this one. I'd be inclined to try an earlier novel by Maggie Shipstead called Seating Arrangement, which was, that was published in 2012, and it was her debut novel. It's a bleak comedy of manners about 3 days of wedding festivities and dramas in a preppy New England town. The book wasn't universally liked. In fact, one reviewer called it a modern-day Edith Wharton on downers, which is quite funny. Perhaps not her best work, but it'll certainly fill in some time for you while you wait.
She sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, I know. I like the thought of the drama.
I'll look into that one.
Another one I'd recommend is A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki. That was a book of finalist as well. And that's also about two intertwined lives. A young woman in Tokyo who's really struggling with bullying and everything, and she's trying to document the life of her great-grandmother, who was a Buddhist nun, who's over 100 years old. And then she has finds a diary, etc. And then across the Pacific, we meet Ruth, who's a novelist living on a remote island. And she finds some things that wash up on the shore, including a Hello Kitty lunchbox.
Yes.
And we suspect that it's from the devastating tsunami. But, and so we get entanglement. That's not a word.
But two sides of the globe.
Yes.
Yes.
Other than that, I'd say Life After Life by Kate Atkinson, 2013. That's sounds awful, but it's a really good read. It was about a woman who was born in 1910 in England, and the book shows different. It loops in and out and shows different ways that she dies or might die. It sounds horrible, but it's really good. Then the other one I would try would be The Signature of All Things by Elizabeth Gilbert, 2013. Say what you will about Eat, Pray, Love, but this one is really exquisite, and it's about coming of age in the age of the Enlightenment, 19th century.
Sure.
So those would be three that I'd have a go at.
Well, I think there's a really good picks while you wait. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll feature take on The Promise by Damon Gilgut. Now, Damon Gilgut is fairly prolific author, well-known in his native South Africa and now well-known globally as well. Now, The Promise is focused on a white South African family, the Swarts. Now, they're gathering on the family farm for the funeral of their mother. Now, the younger family members sit uncomfortably with their own family's history and what they stand for. So in particular, they are concerned with the failed promise that their mother made to give a house to their maid, Salome, who was promised that she would be given a house and land on the death of her mistress, for want of a better word. Now, as each decade passes past the death of her mother, the mother of the family, the promise remains unfulfilled. So what you have is three siblings moving through time and moving through the kind of new South Africa, and they get reunited over time for various family funerals. So, yeah, interesting premise.
That does look very interesting, isn't it?
Now, while you wait for this one, you might want to try The Good Doctor, which is also by Damon Gilgut. Now, we have got the book and the ebook of this one, and it was a Man Booker winner in 2003. It does cover some of the same ground as The Promise. It's got that sort of old and new South Africa debating with each other, reckoning with the past and kind of trying to work towards a different future. In this case, you've got a young medical graduate, Lawrence, who starts his professional life working at a rural South African hospital. Now, he's working under Deputy Hospital Director Frank. And Lawrence is very young and optimistic. Frank is quite cynical. And then you have the other staff in the hospital who are kind of looking on in bemusement as they kind of start to form an uneasy alliance with each other. So, you know, big metaphors, personal relationships, pretty interesting. Yeah. The other one I would suggest you go for is Disgrace by J.M. Coetzee. Now, of course, this is he's another Booker Prize winning author, and this is the title he won the Booker for. He's a legend of South African literature. In this book, David Lurie is a professor. He's in an affair with a student. He's left jobless and shunned by friends when the affair comes out. He retreats to his daughter's small farm, and the family experience a home invasion, which really rocks their foundations, and there's a big change in power imbalance, and there's a big switch in power structure for that family in the new South Africa. Very interesting. A trigger warning there for sexual assault for this book, though, so that should be mentioned. Yeah, very, very dramatic. You will read this one and never forget it.
That's a really powerful one, isn't it?
It really is. Mm. Yeah, I read it a long time ago now and I still think about that book, so I think that is a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, it's me too, and it's really stayed with me. So we've got some good ones that people can have a look at while they're waiting for the big guns to appear on the long list. And we'll do more on the long list over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to exploring the Booker's Dozen a bit more with you, Alison.
Yeah, oh, it'll be really fun. We've got lots of reading to do. Well, look, to our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in today. Take care and be kind to yourselves. Me taki, thank you for listening. And ai re ra, goodbye until next time.
Brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.